future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Quit it now!
Welcome into the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Great to be with you here on a Saturday. We got a short show today, only going 90 minutes until 1:30 when the Aggies pregame starts for the game against Arkansas. Obviously, a big day of college football. We'll talk about all of it going on. Big one in the SEC right now, LSU Vandy. We'll talk about that and all the other big games going on. Get into Texans here in a moment. But first, Cam, Sean, what's up? How you guys doing?
Doing good. Nothing much to report. I don't know.
Nothing exciting. I mean, Cam's got more problems with his gate in his apartment.
Yeah.
Feels like every week we get a text like, oh, someone messed with the gate and I'm going to be late.
That's the cost of living in Midtown. Bunch of idiots.
It's a cult. It feels like you need to start like a neighborhood watch cam for this gate. Like people keep breaking it every week, causing to run behind.
I'm not going to live there much longer to where I care to get involved in something like that.
I'm not going to be there.
You're not that invested in the long-term health and stability of that gate?
I was just going to say of Midtown in general. I don't give a damn anymore.
Al, you're moving completely out of Midtown. You're moving to the suburbs? You getting old? What's going on?
Yeah, if the Heights count as hell to the no.
Heights, no, that's still inner. Well, I guess it's not all inner loop, but no, that doesn't count as a suburb.
No, it's not.
Okay. All right. I didn't know if you're going to old man like me move out to the suburbs.
Once I have multiple children.
Is that far away still?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, now that we got into Cam's future planning for kids and family, welcome in. 90 minutes more to go. Yes. Riveting stuff here as we talk about
we
Cam's
can guarantee
future children.
That we will get a where do you see yourself in 5 years from each one of us today.
Sean Mapes, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Right here.
Right here?
Doing the bullpen with you three guys.
God.
On the way to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think, that'd be 5 years into our 13-year plan to get into the Texas Radio Hall of Fame.
We'll be
to
halfway
beat those
there.
Bums, John Lance. Yeah, well, math doesn't quite work out to half, but sure.
Well, we've been doing it for 2 years.
Yeah, okay, fair. If we're backlogging it, you're right.
No,
you're
3 years.
Yeah.
Right? 23, 22?
February 23, so whatever that works out to. 2.5 years?
I'm 2 years behind y'all.
Yeah. No,
you'll get there.
No,
you've been
with us for more than half a year.
Yeah, I guess are we including our entire radio career?
No, when you started on the bullpen.
That was blown past.
Shut up. All right, so set up the big question here today is I try to sidestep the eventual old joke. Thank you for that. Big question of the day. So I'm going to modify a question that came in on the mailbag segment to Jeremy and Joe this week where they asked, if you could guarantee one player from the Rockets, one player from the Astros, two from the Texans remain in Houston for their entire career, who do you pick? But problem ended up being it kind of became way too obvious for each of them. Like Johnny and I were talking about the show, it kind of became obvious to me that the Rocket you'd pick would be Amen Thompson. I think it's not as obvious as the Rockets, but I would say it's probably the favorite that you would say Hunter Brown for the Astros. And then for the Texans, I think you're probably saying Will Anderson and C.J. Stroud. So I'm modifying it. You can, instead of one from each of those teams, one period. So pick one player on any of the Houston sports teams currently active. We're not doing this, bring back Hakeem Olajuwon and play for this year's Rockets. We're not doing that sports radio trope. But pick one of them who you keeping around for the entirety of their career. You guys want to have a quick weigh in before we move on to the Texans?
Is this somebody that had to have started their career here, started and is currently here?
Currently a player on just a Houston current team.
Oof.
Jose Altuve.
Yeah. But you're not, I mean.
Jose Altuve got an eh?
Well, no, it's just like, to me, it's not maximizing the payoff is not maximized there. You're not getting his prime. He's still really good this year. He hit 26 home runs, but you're not
getting his OPS.
Enough to win me a bet. Yeah, enough to get me a free Jack and Coke on Thursday at Saltgrass Steakhouse. Thank you, Jeremy Branham.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, thank you. But BMAC wants to see Jose Altuve play for a different team. And no, that's okay.
It's just like,
no, you can't wait to see him.
I'm thinking of what's best for the long term of Houston sports, Sean. You're more selfishly looking at, oh, I want to see his jersey on the wall. No, let's save the sentimental crap, Mapes,
okay,
and talk about who maximizes the most return for the investment. Not 36-year-old Jose Altuve. That's who's not.
Okay.
Sorry, I tore that down unnecessarily.
Yeah, no.
Unnecessarily harshly.
I remember how much you hated seeing Craig Biggio finish his career with the Astros. You're just, when he got his 3,000 here, you're like, beat
trade
it, old man.
Trade him.
Make room for Chris Burke.
Hey, he got thrown out at second, right? If you want to stay here, don't get thrown out at second, okay? Selfish, I'll say. Craig Biggio, selfish. Noted selfish player. Cam, before we move on, you got a quick one here?
This is a tough one.
So, no?
No,
Sengun. You had your chance. Think about it. We'll come back to you. Sorry?
Huh?
Oh, I thought you had one.
I did.
He did. Oh. He said Sengun.
Over a men?
Yes. I need to see a men develop more shot-making ability. But as of now, I would say Sengun. But after this year,
it feels like
that
you're
could
saying
change.
Sengun. Like you're
Sengun.
Okay. All right. So let's move into the Houston Texans. Who threw in this question about the language or talk to every animal? John, was that you? Was that your thing? All right. Maybe we'll come back to that later today. That was not something I put in. We'll come back to that. We got to get into Texans before the segment completely
just task
completely gets off the rails here. So I wonder what you guys will think of this opinion. I obviously. People were down on the Texans after the 0-3 start, rightfully so. They were dreadful. Only four red zone trips in three games, and it took to the fourth quarter of the fourth game to get into the red zone again. So the being down on the Texans completely fair, but I'm actually feeling pretty optimistic about this stretch coming up. A pretty tough stretch, at least if you go by the records on the current records right now, where their next four games are all against teams who are currently 4-2, all teams who would be in the playoffs if they started today, that being at Seahawks, then home 49ers, Broncos, and Jags. But I'm feeling pretty optimistic about it because I do think they probably lose on Monday night to the Seahawks. But you look at that stretch after they come home, you're looking at the 49ers who will have George Kittle back, but they've been kind of a banged-up team, and I don't really think they're an explosive offense that's going to, like, if the Texans offense has a down game, that they're going to be out of it because the Texans defense can't hold them down. Like, I think the Texans defense can hold down the 49ers. Same for the Broncos, who, I mean, Bo Nix, I mean, he's okay. I mean, they won at the Eagles. That was impressive. But they've got, what, one weapon that you really worry about with Cortland Sutton? I mean, J.K. Dobbins, I guess, he's been okay. But there's not a lot there offensively that I worry about. And then I'm convinced Trevor Lawrence is the same Trevor Lawrence. He's still staring down his first wide receiver for far too long, making far too many mistakes. So I think there's a pretty good chance here, Sean, that they go 3-1 over the stretch, losing to Seattle, winning the three home games. That would put them in a pretty good spot going forward. Do you share in any of that optimism?
A little bit. I wouldn't. I don't. I can see 3-1, but I wouldn't call it likely. Because the Jags team, like you did. Lose to the Jags team and only scored 10 points against them.
On the road, yeah.
Yes.
That's a part of it.
Yes. The Broncos, again, another defense where I'm like, how many points are we penciling in this Texans offense?
That could be a 13-10 game, yeah.
Yeah. And the Niners, okay, no Fred Warner. You like that spot there, especially at home. So, yeah, I kind of see more 2-2 in this stretch, and we're just kind of
which I don't
still
think kills you. If they're 2-2, it doesn't kill you.
2-2 is like
one to three does. One to three kills you. You're dead. You're 3-6 at that point. You're dead.
2-2, kind of. We then move on to like the next stretch of games and be like, what do they need over this four games to, to just kind of dangle us along through the season?
Yeah.
Well, they do play the Titans again. I see some of the optimism. I just do need to see this team like be good against a good team. That is like my ultimate test is like, can you score against a good team? I still don't really know.
You don't know yet.
It's been 3 weeks since they played a good team. So it's been, I feel like we've kind of forgotten that they really struggled to score whatsoever, move the ball really against good teams the first three games of the season.
Yeah, I'm with Sean. I think 3-1 is possible, but I'm more likely to go with 2-2 because I think Seattle is the real test. Like, the offense has been nice the last 2 weeks, but it's been against terrible teams. So I think
Seattle has like maybe the best defense.
I believe they're top six in scoring on offense and defense.
Yeah, I mean, I think they lead the league in like explosive plays, which is crazy to think that Sam Darnold is leading the charge in that.
Jackson Smith and Jigba's been
He's been amazing. But yeah, I think 2-2 is more likely, which going into the Tennessee game wouldn't be bad.
No, it wouldn't. And even with Seattle, like I'm booking that as a loss in this scenario.
Yeah, but it's not like
it's some unwinnable game because I know what I'm about to say is far easier said than actually done. But it does feel like another scenario where, like, and Sam Darnold cooked them last year in that game against Minnesota. But it does feel like Seattle is kind of similar to Denver in that, okay, Denver has Cortland Sutton. What else are you scared of? Seattle has Jackson Smith and Jigba. What else are you scared of?
Cup.
1,000 years old. I mean,
he's on my fantasy team, so I can tell you that.
The running game is pretty. I mean, I like Ken Walker, but they don't seem to use him in a way that is really a threat to opposing teams. They nuke him by putting in Zach Charbonnet and his terrible efficiency. So, like, I do see a path there. I think the Texans probably lose by like 3-4 points, but I do see a path there to beat the Seahawks. And if they do, then, you know, look out, then my optimism is going to go up to a whole nother level.
Yeah.
But I think if they come out of this, certainly 3-1, obviously, but at least 2-2, you're still in. Anything less, you're dead. Because if you go 1-3, let's say, and that puts the Texans' record at 3-6, and you still got the Chiefs, you still have the Bills, you still have 2 games against the Colts, you still have, there's another tough game. Oh, the Chargers, we'll see. I mean, obviously the offensive line's beat up, but still a pretty good team. Like, if they go into that stretch at 3-6, they're done.
Yeah, especially since what did most people talk about? They were probably going to have 7 losses this year.
I mean, ten and seven is what they've done in each of the first 2 years with DeMeco and Stroud.
And 10-7, we've talked about this before. 10-7 is like the record, the bare minimum record to be like, you will probably make the playoffs.
Right. Yeah, nine and eight.
It's tiebreakers. It's a weak third wild card. Like, it's a lot of ifs there. So 10-7 is like the kind of the good number to keep in your head of like, you need to go 10-7. And now they're 2-3 right now. So yeah, 2-2 in this stretch, that gets them to 4-5. You can see the path there.
You can talk me into an upset win against one of those teams I named, and then you're right back in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I look at it. All right, so as the show goes on, please send in your answers to the big question. That is, of course, guarantee one current Houston athlete finishes his career in Houston across the Rockets, Astros, and Texans. If you want to be a maverick and throw in the Dynamo, go ahead. But I'm not.
Jack McGlynn.
Yeah, Jack. There we go.
Give me Jack McGlynn.
Ezekiel Ponce. You want to throw in? You want to throw in a Dynamo player? I think I've exhausted the list of Dynamo players I know. Steve Clark's gone. He was the goalie the year before. Jonathan Bond won their goal. Oh, yeah. Look at that. Yeah. Me flexing my soccer knowledge.
That's going. But
you got another one we could go back
and
forth?
No, I said it matters.
Oh, okay. All right. I was hoping soccer we could just matters. Go back and forth just naming off the entire Dynamo roster. It's riveting radio.
Nah.
I don't think we can.
We can, but I don't think we will. I don't think we will. We could do that, but
clearly
we have to
our
hit a break.
Soccer knowledge. Yeah. Look, Johnny. Look, we would do it, but Johnny's in my ear, like get the break.
That's
like,
great, John impression.
Yeah, no, spot on, John impression. Get the break. That's what John sounds like in my head. But sorry, John. But send in your submissions. Current Houston athlete. We're not going back in time. Finishes his career in Houston. Who are you picking? Send that to the HRMP listener line. You can call or text 713-780-3776. When we get back from the break on the other side, get us some NFL, talk about that old man bowl on Thursday night, the Icy Hot Bowl, I think people were dubbing it, and then talk about some of these big injuries at the wide right receiver position. That when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5 to the Bullpen. I'm Brian McDonald, joined by Sean Makes, Cam Smith, and John Bellmer. If you want to join in the conversation, either big question or any other thoughts you have on mine, give us a call or a text to the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. So that Thursday night football game, pretty damn fun. I don't know. I don't think anyone's expectation was we're getting a shootout.
Maybe
people thought it could be sneaky close, and like, but they probably thought sneaky close was, you know, 2017.
Yeah.
Instead, we got a shootout with both teams in the 30s. That was a fun ass game on Thursday night.
Both teams in the 30s. I don't think either quarterback was in the 30s.
No, Flacco's 40 and Rodgers is 41.
Yeah. So it was, like you said, a surprising good game. I mean, even Rodgers, you know, Rodgers has been good, pretty good this year, but he hasn't been lighting up the scoreboard in a while. Like, a Rodgers team hasn't done that in years. So, yeah, it was a fun game. It was a little unexpected treat. And it warmed the cockles of my heart seeing two old timers slinging it out there. Those are the guys I grew up on. None of this newfangled Jackson Dart BS. Get out of here.
I don't know if this is the 42-year-old.
Give me a statue quarterback that when he pulls it on his zone read,
dude,
everyone in the stadium is stunned.
when Joe Flacco pulled it, which apparently we found out later, that wasn't the play call.
It was like a freelance.
Like, he just freelanced it. When Joe Flacco pulled it and ran it on the zone read, I lost my damn mind. That was the wildest bleep I've seen in an NFL game in a long time.
This gets talked about a lot, and very rarely does it actually apply to me watching a game. That was literally a jaw-dropping moment.
Like, 100%. That was the exact expression. As soon as he pulls it and runs up, I'm just sitting on my chair like, what?
Did you have to replay it?
Well, they did it for
me. Put it in reverse, Terry.
Yeah.
What was that drop?
Put it in reverse, Terry.
Put it in reverse, them. Okay. I was 100%. Like, it's overset time. Oh, jaw-dropping moment. No, that was legit. Like, I was so stunned.
If you gave me a list of, like, 200 different football plays that I thought was going to happen and put them in order, that would be number 200.
It'd be 201. Like, he would, like, intentionally not put it on the
list. Kneel down would have been ahead.
Yes. That was unbelievable. Joe Flacco pulling that off. I mean, can you imagine what we would, like, the mockery would be coming his way if he just pulls, like, that tripped and just gets lit up at 2 yards down the field?
Yeah.
But that was
real
super
football
fun.
Was back for one night.
Look, I don't know if this is the old man of me speaking, but give me the two old dudes playing over, like, a matchup of two rookie quarterbacks any day. It was way more fun. I can't guarantee it'll be better football all the time, although on Thursday night it was. But, man, that was fun.
Yeah.
Watching the old man sling it. Now, I think part of it was brought down by the Steelers having to play five tight ends at all time.
Well, you know.
Ugh. Arthur Smith, man.
That's just part of what you sign up for. Smith.
Good Lord. I cannot stand it.
Get help.
I can't stand that.
And
the
they
offense.
Can't run the ball either.
Well, they did on Thursday.
Well,
Jaylen Warren was tearing it up.
Yeah, he had 117 yards. But leading up to it,
19 fantasy points. That's all I care about.
Leading up to it, I was just God.
Yeah, neither team could run it coming in. I mean, Chase Brown was under 3 yards per carry coming in. All of a sudden, he ripped off like over 100 yards and like just 13 carries, something like that. It was crazy.
Thursday night games are always weird.
Yeah, well, it's usually weird on the bad side, though. It's like, ugh, this fourth quarter and it's 10-7. Like, what are we doing? But it was quite the opposite this last Thursday.
Good Lord, the fact that at the very end of the game, watching Aaron Rodgers sling that ball like 70 yards.
Let's be honest. I was like, everyone thought he was converting that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, with Rodgers, you do just like in the back of your head, you're just like, he probably gets
Not only did it get there, but DK was sneakily pretty damn close to bringing that down. Like, it just went barely over his head.
Rodgers also had another throw over the middle of the field that was like a glitch in a video game. It got there so fast. Like, it got through traffic so fast.
Oh, yeah. It was the long pass to Freiemuth, right?
Yeah.
I know what
you're
talking
about. It was crazy.
I don't know how it got over that defender that was sitting underneath.
Rodgers, he's not as good as he once was,
but
he's as good once as he ever was.
Thank you, Toby Keith.
Wow.
Let me pour one out for Toby Keith.
Good one.
Too bad I don't have a red Solo cup to pour it out of. That would make it more appropriate for
proceed to party.
I'm trying to think of the words to that song about freedom that he sings, but Courtesy of the red, white, and
we'll
blue.
We'll stick a boot in your ass. Yeah. It's the American way.
Exactly. Something like that.
I mean, that's what Joe Flacco was doing Steelers. When
he pulled it out on the zone read, he stuck a boot in the ass of Mike Tomlin. He was bitching the media about the Browns being unfair.
I'll be honest, on whatever, Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever he said that, I was like a little surprised that Tomlin, like, why does Tomlin really care?
He was worked up about it.
Yeah, why are you that worked up? I understand why he was worked up that he had to play Joe
they
Flacco.
They win that game if Jake Browning's still starting.
100%.
They win that game like 30-10. It's a cakewalk.
Yeah.
It's a cakewalk. It's amazing. I mean, you disagree, Cam? You're looking confused.
I can't tell if that's sarcasm.
No, I'm being serious. Steelers crush him if Jake Browning's the starter.
Okay.
Are you a big Jake Browning guy? What am I missing here?
No.
Okay. Well, you look at me confused. Like
I think they had a much better shot with Flacco.
Okay. All right. Well, you look at me like you disagreed, so I wasn't sure where that was going. But I'm like, do you? I don't know if we have the clip, John. It might be in Ryan's folder if you can find it. We played it on the air yesterday, but there was a radio host in Cleveland lost his damn mind about this trade with Joe Flacco, talking about how the Browns aren't trying to win. Like, this is another sign of the team not trying to be competitive and put out a good offense. Like, look, I know he was great on Thursday night, Joe Flacco, that is, but, like, it wasn't going to happen in Cleveland. Like, I don't understand what the angst is. Like, if you'd kept him in Cleveland, even if you play like he did last night, like, okay, cool, you win six games. Like, you're not a playoff team.
It's also, like, they just the nuts and bolts. I mean, you see this more in, like, basketball or baseball. It's that, like, they kind of had to open up the spot to give their young guys a play. Like, they have to open up. It's, you know, like in baseball. Like, a team will trade an older shortstop because they have a shortstop prospect coming up. That's
they know they're not going to win that year.
That's
like the Browns know.
That's what the Browns had to do. They have two rookie quarterbacks. You got to start playing them.
Yeah, so here, was it Tony Rizzo? Was that the name, John? We got the club he found. Let's listen to this Cleveland radio host absolutely lose his mind that the Browns traded away Joe Flacco.
How could you do that, Andrew? How could you do it? Why on earth did you feel the need to trade this guy to a division opponent for a fifth-round draft pick? Fireable offense. That is a fireable offense. I want to know how much longer the owner's going to watch this crap, because the fans have had it. We deserve better. You're worried more about your stadium than you are your football team. That's the perception, Jimmy. And you allow these people to do this? You have the worst offense in the league. Your GM screwed this quarterback thing up like I've never seen in my life. I've never seen anything like kids that play Madden could have done a better job. Truly. That's not hyperbole. It's a joke.
I like the jeering. All right,
you can cut it, John. You can cut it.
I like the, like, jeering bed that they have.
I guess the producer's playing some generic booing underneath. But I love the idea that he talked about how putrid the offense is and how they screwed this quarterback thing. I'm like, yeah, it was putrid when Joe Flacco was playing. You got a fifth-round pick for him. You should be happy.
Do you want to put on a tinfoil hat?
Please, put it on.
What if they made that trade to guarantee themselves that they're fourth in the division and get an easier schedule next year? The Ravens are going to get a Lamar back, and so they're they're not going to go 1-1.
No, they won't be the last place in the division.
And the Bengals with Jake Browning were charging for the Browns spot. Hadn't won a game. They're 2-0 with Joe Burrow 0-0 since then. Browns are like, hey, listen, what if a little tank commander here? You get a little bit better of a quarterback, we get worse.
I think the simple answer is the simple answer. Like, they knew, with Joe Flacco, without Joe Flacco, they were going to have a bottom five offense that was probably at best winning five games. Like, maybe six if things go crazy in the direction. Five actually might even be optimistic for him. Like, I don't know how that radio host could look at what he had seen until the point they traded Joe Flacco and thought, well, if they only kept him, because he's saying you should have kept him, right? Like, if you'd only kept him, things are going to get so much better. They're going to make the playoffs. Like, he's talking about you chose You chose money over winning. They weren't winning with Joe Flacco, and he's a 40-year-old quarterback you got a fifth-round pick for.
Yeah.
I don't understand the angst there in Cleveland.
Yeah.
I
get the angst, but not at that specific move.
I feel like we've officially talked too much about this.
Maybe so. All right, so quick question here before we go to break. Bengals now 3-4. After that win on Thursday night, the Ravens, of course, 1-5 now coming off their bye week. Going into their bye week, 1-5 going into the bye week. Who's more likely to make the playoffs, Cam? Bengals at 3-4 or the Ravens at 1-5? Obviously, they think they're getting Lamar back next week coming off the bye, so you could probably talk yourself into them ripping off, 8 wins out of 11 games or whatever's left on the schedule. I'll do the quick math. There are 11 games, so like an 8-3 stretch, or can the Joe Flacco-led Bengals keep things around 500 until Burrow gets back in December and make the playoffs? What's more likely to you? I've got the schedule on the dock there if you want.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Ravens now. I mean, obviously, their
schedules are actually pretty similar. They both have the Bears. They both have the Jets. I think that's actually where the similarities end, although both do have an AFC East team. The Bengals have to play the Patriots, where the Ravens have to play the Dolphins, but... Where are you leaning?
Those two losses or those two wins that the Bengals have on the Ravens, I mean, those are big, but it's still a team that if the Ravens get healthy, because it's not just Lamar, but I think they have like 3 defensive starters coming back.
Roquan Smith, I think, should be back when they return.
So obviously that team is hella more talented than Cincinnati, but man, to come back from already 5 losses... But their schedule, I mean, it's the Dolphins, Vikings, Browns, Jets, like, Bengals, Steelers, Bengals. It's soft. Like, it's soft.
But
like,
so is the Bengals. The Bengals schedule's pretty soft, too.
But the Ravens, they feel like a better team. They're getting back a better quarter. Like, they are getting Lamar Jackson back.
He's better than this Joe Flacco? Are you kidding me?
You know what?
I saw Joe Flacco run that.
You know what?
Read.
I don't know.
I mean, it might come down to like the last game of the season, but I guess I'm going to have to just go with.
Well, they
with
play
the Ravens.
Each other. They play each other on November 27th.
I'm just going to like on principle alone just say the Ravens because I think they're better, but they have an easier schedule, but 2 more losses. Basically.
Yeah, it's tough because it's hard to get past the math at 1-5 because like we've mentioned like 10-7 is like what you have to get to.
Yeah,
that means. Their final 11 games, they got to go 9-2. Now, a fully healthy Ravens team, that's certainly possible, but 9-2 is a lot to ask for any team, much less a team that injured.
They still have to like get right on defense. Not just get healthy, but like get good at defense. So
I guess I kind of think that's as easy as getting healthy, but maybe not.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I'm like, we think this Bengals team's going to make the playoffs?
I mean, I'm looking at the next 5 weeks leading up to when they play the Ravens on 11/27, which that could decide a lot. And I don't think Burrow would be back for that, so that would be a Joe Flacco game. But they've got the Jets. I think they can win that game.
I think so, too. They have the Bears at home,
which Bears will be favored, but I don't think
common opponent with the Ravens.
That's not an unwinnable game. Then their bye week, they're at the Steelers, probably lost, but they did just beat them, and then home for the Patriots. Like, I mean, there's not a can't win that game on their schedule.
Yeah, but the
I'm not saying they would, but there's not a they can't win that game on their schedule.
It's like even easier.
I know. Like, but they're starting from a 2-game deficit.
Like you take out the Steelers and Patriots and give them the Dolphins and Vikings. That's the difference.
No, it's a much easier schedule for sure. So it sounds like you're leaning Ravens.
Yeah. Just like benefit of the doubt, they're the better team. Also, when the Ravens play the Bengals, if they're healthy and they have Lamar Jackson, like I would just pick the Ravens in that game. And so that makes it a little bit tougher for the Bengals.
Yeah, no, if the Ravens win that. Yeah, because if we're both thinking, let's say they both are above 500 over that 5-game stretch, then the Ravens win the head-to-head, then obviously it puts them in the driver's seat.
They can just end the Bengals season.
We got to get to break. Johnny's already a mayor again. Get to break. You guys know. You've heard his voice. Yeah, I know. You've heard his voice.
Why do I sound like a grandmother?
I don't know who that is. That's not Johnny. Yeah. Johnny's voice is, get to break.
He's trying to deepen his voice.
Yeah, it's kind of familiar. Sean Compton to Grandma Pig from Peppa Pig World. I think you're pretty accurate in that. But when we get back on the other side of the break, let's talk about some college football. Woof, Miami, Carson Beck, what in the world happened? We'll talk about that. And a spicy hot take from Paul Feinbaum. That one, the pull, bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
I said, girls, I ain't as good as I once was. I got a few years on me now.
This is the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, Sean, are we singing along? Cam, are we singing along?
I once was. I'm as good once as I ever was.
Come on, Cam. Where were you?
It wasn't on.
Oh, yeah. There's a way to remedy that. You turn it on. Johnny muted him. He didn't want to hear Cam singing. You don't want to hear Cam singing? It's not like my voice is much better.
You know.
Well, Sean turned on his own mic. I didn't even think about it this time.
Oh, well. Oh, well.
How dareth
Diva.
Run it back. Run it back. We'll give Cam a chance at this later. No, I'm kidding. All right, college football world, let's get into it. Right now, big game in the SEC where the winner, of course, still very much alive in the race to make the college football playoff, but the loser's odds drop, not to where the point where they're dead, but they get to be in a pretty tough spot of that, of course, with LSU going to Vanderbilt right now.
Trying to pull the upset and beat Vanderbilt?
Yeah, not a thing you would say very often, but you're right. Like this, right now, it's a 1-point Vanderbilt lead, 14-13, but I mean, I think the big question for LSU, Sean, so far, and it's been the obvious one, when they played a Power Four team, the most they've scored in the game is 20 points, which is weird because under Les Miles there, but under Brian Kelly, like before, it's like, okay, they have a great offense.
Yeah.
I mean, we know obviously Jaden Daniels and all the receivers they've had, a Heisman winner, right? But their defense completely sucks. Yeah. Now their defense is great. But, I mean, you look at their four games against Power Four teams, they scored 20-20, I believe 19-13 in those four games. So, offense has a lot to prove today.
Yeah. They kind of ended up playing like whack-a-mole almost with the, like, okay, we fixed the defense. Yeah. Now the offense stinks. All right, cool. So, you know, if we're going off recent history, they got 7 more points left them in this game. So
defense better.
Pavia, give me one more touchdown. You win. But I mean, obviously they have 13 points at halftime. So they probably shouldn't say this, but they'll probably get over 20. You have to imagine. So
maybe I
do think that will ultimately be kind of what, you know, if they lose this game and things kind of fall apart for LSU, like that'll be what ultimately kind of does in the Brian Kelly tenure, is that he just couldn't field the defense for the first three years of his tenure there.
Well, you look at their schedule coming up too, and I'm pulling it up as we speak.
Yeah,
to make
they
sure
have,
I, it's, they I know
have
they've got
Alabama, they have A&M, and I think they have Oklahoma as well.
Oklahoma at the end of the season. Yeah, I believe the next two games after this are Alabama or A&M and then Alabama. And like you said, OU at the end of the season. Like, this is a – it's not a – Will Kunkel's going to hate me for this.
Careful.
It's not a must win.
No,
but it not feels, at all. But it feels like Brian Kelly's going to have to surprise us in one of these games to keep his job. Like between this game, Alabama, A&M, and Oklahoma to finish the year, I don't think they could go anything less than 3-1 if he wants to keep his job, which feels like a tall ask. For this offense, but like,
especially if you're talking about the one being Vanderbilt, like, you know, they might get the one today.
Exactly. So I mean, like, if they go 2-2 in those four games, their best possible record's 9-3. They're not in the playoffs, and I think he's gone.
Yeah. I wonder what 9-3. Would mean for him. There is a little bit of like tiebreaker goes to his fan base hates him, so that doesn't help. Mm-hmm. I do wonder about that as Vanderbilt makes a
field
goal.
17-13.
Yes. I mean, LSU, they really got to win.
They got to win.
They really got to. The more we talk it out, like, they really got to win this one.
How hot do you think that seat is, Cam?
I think it's pretty hot. I mean, for everything that y'all basically had touched on, the fact that nobody likes him, in the town that he's
you're right, coaching. But it's just found, him. It's a funny way to say it. Like, nobody likes
and him. 9-3 at LSU is not going to cut it. And that's no, that's
probably
if,
not.
That's if he goes 9-3 because yeah, obviously this game's not given. A&M is going to be hella hard. Alabama, hell, they could even lose to Arkansas. And then, yeah, like you said, they finish off with Oklahoma. Yeah,
I guess they could lose to Arkansas, but I'll pencil a win in for them there. But
it's not outside the realm.
It's not. It's not the craziest, you know, the craziest thing that's ever happened for sure. So one team that took a loss last night that I don't think a lot of people saw coming, where it was the number two team in the nation, the Miami Hurricanes, lose at home to Louisville. In the game, Carson Beck, who, according to the Heisman favorite odds going into the game, was tied for first with Ty Simpson as the favorite to win the Heisman. That was a fraudulent bet. Hopefully he didn't make it. But he throws four picks, and Miami goes down. It feels like Miami's just kind of due one of these games every year, Sean. And I didn't expect to see Louisville, but they've – like, you look at their schedule coming up, their remaining schedule, Stanford at SMU, Syracuse, NC State at Virginia Tech, Pitt. What I didn't mention for any of those teams was a ranking number. So it's kind of a similar situation to last year where they slip up against Syracuse and their schedule's so soft that it's going to be hard for them. I think they could still get into the playoff, obviously. Obviously, yeah. Win the ACC title game you're in. But that remaining schedule is not going to help them climb up the standings if teams behind them keep winning.
Yeah, yeah. And the difference is last year they went 10-2. So they do need, they do need to lose another one. And I know that while, like, technically, I don't think they're currently in the ACC title game, like, if the season ended today, but the teams they're behind are Georgia Tech and Virginia, two teams where it's like, I'm not penciling them in for a perfect 8-0 in conference play. So,
no, 100%, especially Virginia.
Yeah, I think that they're still very much alive in it. They are just not as you know, they're up there as with Ohio State, you know, as one of the best teams, viewed as one of the best teams in the country, one of the teams that have the least amount of questions about them in the country. And, yeah, you lose a home game to a all-right Louisville team. Like, that changes the way we think about you.
Yeah, 100%. So how are you feeling about Miami's chances now, Cam, to make the college football playoff? You still think they're better than 50-50, or are you starting to lose confidence that they'll get it done?
I think they're still a little better than 50-50, but it's just crazy. Like, looking at their stats, like, against non-conference teams, they've done amazing. But against conference, they're 1-1, and their point differential is only, like, 3. So they haven't played great against their own conference. And with a bunch of conference games remaining,
to that point, though, their out-of-conference wins were so impressive.
Yeah.
That it kind of feels like they'll be given – I think the difference between – this year and last year, not only, like, as Sean pointed out, the extra loss, 10-2 versus one loss so far, but I think their quality of wins, I mean, obviously starting off the year beating Notre Dame, beating Florida, which, I mean, say what you want about Florida, but still an SEC school. Like, their quality of wins, I think, is good enough to maybe buy them some benefit of the doubt where it wasn't last year.
Yeah, because, I mean, Notre Dame might be a team that they're competing with for an at-large spot if they don't win the ACC, and they'll have the head-to-head win, and if we're talking about them going 10-2, the best Notre Dame can go is 10-2. So they would have, you know, the tiebreaker, so to speak, over Notre Dame, you'd think.
All right, so more college football when we get back from on the other side of the break. We were told, I found out during the break, that apparently the Aggies game has been pushed back to weather. So instead of us being done at 1:30, we're now going to 2 o'clock. So quick programming note there. And next week, Sean...
Yeah,
we got two shows next week. I think John's on the board for one. Ryan Morrow's on the board for the other. But we'll be noon to 2 on Saturday and then 10 a.m. to noon on Sunday. You, Joe, and I live from Le Bourge Casino in Lake Charles, Louisiana. So that'll be fun. But two shows next weekend. Cam's giving me sad eyes. Cam's
I'll be out there in the November
date.
Well,
if your gate opens. I mean, that's the unknown that you can't really plan for.
My gate?
Yeah, if the gate opens. Like, you'll only be there if the gate opens and you can get out. I mean, it feels like it's 50-50 every time you try to leave the apartment.
Well, if I can't leave the gate, then I'll walk to my mom's house and get the spare car to make it to Le Bourge.
Wow. Cam's going to jack a card against Lake Charles. Wow. How Louisiana of you. All right, let me get back on the other side of the break. We'll get some more college football to talk about. Heisman odds and, again, that spicy take from Paul Feinbaum. That when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and
92.5. This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back into the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. If you're just tuning in, programming note, we were originally only going to 1:30, but the Aggies game has been delayed by weather, so we are now going to 2 o'clock. So you got another hour and 14 minutes with myself, Cam Smith, Sean Mapes, and John Delmer. And if you want to weigh in on the big question or any of the topics here, we're talking college football in this segment. Hit us up, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. That's call or text. Again, the big question, if you can guarantee one Houston athlete, current, pro, plays his entire career here in Houston, who you picking? I think so far, I don't remember if you got, Cam, have you locked in an official pick? Was it Shingun?
Mucci Norris.
Okay. See, you're just not taking this.
Matt no, Maloney.
No.
Okay. See, I
Boston no. Akbar.
Okay. Actually, I like that one. I like
only because he fought Karl Malone.
Yeah. They did a bobblehead where he had a purple piece of purple cloth in his hand, like from that game.
I would pay decent money for that bobblehead add it to my collection.
I mean, I have it, so let's
what's decent
let's,
money?
Let's barter.
Yeah,
what's
let's decent talk, money. What's decent money to? Yeah, let's find out.
I'll have to do my research before I just.
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, yeah. Come on, you're
check
over here
the market.
You're over here talking reckless. No, you're going to make a bid. I've got it. I've got
it. $30.
Yeah.
Now look it up. Come with
pay that man his money.
Oh, Johnny, I love you.
I'm going to look favorite up movies. During the break. Rounders. I'm going to go to eBay and Amazon and find out.
Yeah. All right. We may make
shop
a deal.
Around.
We may make a deal here on the show. My Venmo's open.
Shop around.
All right. See if we can pull something out.
Yeah, call John Clay real quick.
Yeah, John Clay will. What's he gonna offer? Yeah.
I don't think the Boki Nakbar bobblehead is a VIN number. Give me the VIN. I don't think that works on the bobblehead market. All right, so back to college football. Of course, one of the big pieces of news this week, I believe it happened on Thursday. Kirk Cignetti at Indiana got the huge extension. Going to pay him like 11.2 per year, like $93 million total. Big contract. I think in part, not only because he's done a great job at Indiana, obviously made the playoff last year, beat Oregon this year. Seems like they're on the way back to the playoff again this year. Not only because he's done a great job, but I think also probably because they had a slight fear, at least, that he might end up being a candidate for Penn State or one of these other big name job openings. Obviously, Indiana, not traditionally a football powerhouse until Kurt Cignetti got there. But Paul Feinbaum, known to give out a hot take or two. He was on First Take with Stephen A. Smith. Stephen A. Smith asked him this question you're about to hear. Did Indiana make a mistake, Paul Feinbaum, in giving Kurt Cignetti this large contract extension?
They did not. And before anybody jumps out of their chair, allow me to explain. I think everyone on this panel agrees that he's done a phenomenal job. But Stephen A., this is how programs get in trouble. They just gave him an extension and a contract raise at the end of last season. We are barely at the midpoint. Let it play out before you completely send the Brinks truck up. And by the way, because Indiana is going to be in the playoffs, there's no way he could leave anytime before December or January. A couple of years ago, remember, Mel Tucker, Michigan State, they gave him a $100 million deal. He went out and lost to Ohio State, and he completely imploded after that. James Franklin, same thing. Jimbo Fisher, same thing. All I'm suggesting is take a deep breath, Indiana. Let the season play out a little bit before you mortgage a guaranteed $93 million contract that you may have to figure out a way to pay for down the road.
All right, so I messed up the lead into that. He was actually asked, did they make a mistake? So, he was asked, did they get it right? He answers, no, they did not. Look, I get the latter part of Paul Feinbaum's take. Like, there's obviously plenty of examples where teams rushed into the huge contract extension. We obviously saw that here 2 hours away pretty recently with Jimbo Fisher, where they gave him the huge contract extension, and then he was out of a job, what, 2 years later? Something like that. It was pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But look, I think it's a little different here with Indiana because, I mean, not like A&M obviously has – A&M doesn't have tons of titles. Their last legit title before they made some up was like in like 1938,
1939. Something Crow.
John David Crow?
Something like that.
I think, yeah, the running back. Yeah, I believe he's the Heisman winner for them. But like I get it, that take, if it's about a traditional power that can probably go out, and if they lose that coach because he jumps to another job, just replace him with another great coach. And it's just a factory where they're constant. They're not, you know, they're not rebuilding. They're just reloading. It's like Ohio State with wide receivers. There's always the next guy. But with Indiana, I don't know, man. I don't mind them locking up. They've had, I mean, not virtually no success. They've had no success in their program history, quite literally, until the last 2 years under Cignetti. I don't mind this contract extension. What do you guys think?
Yeah, no. I mean, even if he, like, falls down to earth and just goes 7-5 every year. That's a huge success for Indiana football. Like
Think they've had a 10-win season in their history, have they?
I don't know.
I think I saw a stat was like the best they'd done was 9-3 and it was, or 9 wins and it was 3 times in their history.
Yeah, they're a team that I think was on the like bottom five win percentages for college football programs. So yeah, they should just keep them by any means necessary. And it does, you know, in a way speak to their commitment to football that they're going to, you know, this won't be a flash in the pan thing, that they're going to keep shoveling money into this. If they're going to pay their coach $11 million a year, that means that they are invested in this really for the first time in any real way. So you expect this success to at least to continue for as long as Kurt Cignetti's there.
I was going to say Indiana's only desirable because he's there. And if you're going to try and bring in top recruits, recruits aren't going to want to go to a team where, like, you don't know what's going to happen with the head coach.
Where the coach is rumored to leave for Penn State.
Exactly.
What's a way to end that? Give him $93 million.
Yeah. No, I mean, who cares if he got an extension? What was it last year? Like, that was last year. He's done even better this year. So why not lock him in? Yeah. Especially like Sean said, you're going all in on the football team, which they've never, ever done before. So what?
Yeah. No, I don't get the putting my hand in the pockets of these teams trying to like what? You never heard that, like, pocket watching?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, put your hand in their pocket.
Well, like trying to take money out of their pocket, basically. Okay, maybe the phrasing was a little weird. Yeah. I'll give you that.
Reaching in their front pocket?
Hey,
for what?
Hey, what happens behind? No.
You know, in jail, Brian, that means something different.
Prison, I think. Well, never mind. I'm not gonna say the term. But I don't get the idea of trying to like talk about how, like the idea of them overreaching in this.
Well,
case.
It's also the thing is he brings up James Franklin, Jimbo Fisher,
and the Michigan State head coach.
Yeah,
his name.
Mel Tucker, who got fired for lewd acts on a Zoom call. And he pulled a Louis C.K. That's what he got fired for. They actually ended up not having to pay the buyout because he got fired for cause because he was tugging it on camera. So like that is only a problem with Jimbo Fisher.
That phrase today.
That's only a problem. The Jimbo Fisher buyout and the James Franklin buyout are only a problem because they got fired. Under no circumstance should Indiana ever fire Kurt Cignetti.
Yeah.
Even if he just goes 3-9. Like, you just keep him. And he's also in his 60s, so it's not like a super long-term thing anyway. Like, if there is a fall-off, like, just ride it out. Because you're Indiana.
Yeah, like
chances
you said earlier,
whoever you hire, they're also going to go 4-8.
Yeah, like
you said earlier, like, I mean, what's the downside on his next few years? He goes 7-5, 8-4? I think you're still – I mean, given, like, the current rate of what – coaches are getting paid.
It just goes
and
to
the past success of your program being none. I think it's still worth it.
Yeah, if he just goes to bowls consistently, like again, if he would just be the greatest Indiana coach of all time. If
he just goes 8-4 every year.
Yeah, they finish this year. Say they go 10-2. They make the playoff. If they go 6-6 for 3 more years, he is still by far the best coach in Indiana history.
I don't see the downside that he points out again, because there's the downside of A&M, the downside of Penn State.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the buyout, but they can afford to pay it. But like you said, they're not going to have to pay the buyout with Cignetti because he's going to be the best option they have regardless. So before we got a couple minutes before we hit the break. Obviously, I think I mentioned this last segment when we were talking about Miami, that the odds board for the Heisman had Carson Beck in a tie with Ty Simpson, the Alabama quarterback, at the top of the odds for the Heisman race. Obviously, four interceptions for Carson Beck. He gone. He way down the list at this point. I mean, not to go all chalk, but I kind of believe the Ty Simpson being the favorite thing. Obviously, Alabama has the schedule, the big wins. They're Alabama, too, so they're going to be, you know, getting all the attention it would require to win a Heisman. They obviously have had a lot of Heisman winners over the years with Derrick Henry, Mark Ingram, and Devonta Smith. But on top of that, I mean, Ty Simpson's numbers are fantastic. 16 touchdowns to one pick. He's passing for a ton of yards every game. I think this really is, at this point, Ty Simpson's race to lose. What do you guys think?
Yeah, no, I completely agree because, I mean, they have a big one today against Tennessee at home. They'll play LSU at home. They'll play Oklahoma at home. Then they finish up in Auburn for the Iron Bowl. And that's what always was, I don't want to say confusing, but I felt it got underrated with Carson Beck in Miami being the top Heisman contender. We talked about their schedule earlier. What game is going to be in the national spotlight in November for them? It's only in the national spotlight if they lose.
Yeah, I was about to say, what game in October? I mean, really, it was just like their first three weeks that they're playing marquee matchups.
And I think that's what people need to remember is that, like, you do need, like, a narrative push. You need to be, like, the story or at least the player story of college football 100%. To get that push. So I think that was kind of ignored in the Carson Beck thing. I think Ty Simpson has a terrific chance to do it, and he's been the best quarterback in the SEC so far this season, and I think he's going to have more opportunities to prove it. Even if they lose today, they'll have, what, two, three more primetime games to prove it. So,
yeah, he gets the rebound.
Yeah, I think I go Ty Simpson as well. If I had to go someone lower on the odds board, I mean, I might go with Marcell Reed from A&M.
You should place the bet, and he's plus 2,000.
Well, guess where I'm going to be next week?
LeBurge Casino, I heard.
Yeah. Where I can do that. So, yeah, I mean, looking at this, like maybe Fernando Mendoza, Indiana quarterback.
If they go, let's say they go 11-1.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be, he'll at least get an invite to New York.
Yeah, that's the thing. I wish you could just bet on, like, invite to New York, because I feel like that's much easier for this
than
who's actually going to lift the trophy. I mean, I want to check Indiana's schedule, see if they have – yeah, they really don't have a huge matchup for the rest of the season either. It's UCLA, Maryland, Penn State. Oh, Penn State, that's a big game. Oh, no, wait, it's not. Wisconsin, Purdue. So, like, they're also not going to have a huge spotlight on them, and he's at Indiana, so the spotlight isn't just naturally going to be there.
11-1 would be a disappointment with that schedule you ran off. But, I mean, it is still Indiana.
Yeah, I think you just drop one. Like, I don't know. Really, I mean, Miami.
Miami just lost a home to Louisville.
So I think that Ty Simpson's probably the best bet, especially as, I mean, he is the favorite for a reason.
So where are you at with this, Cam? Are you betting on Ty Simpson? Or if you're looking at the rest of this board, like, who would you throw your dart at?
No, I would definitely put my money on Ty Simpson. And same thing with Sean. I mean, to be honest, I think Marcell Reed is way too low down compared to where Beck is, because going into that game, Marcell had more touchdowns and passing yards than Beck. So it's like his stats were even better than Carson Beck, and then Carson Beck just threw four interceptions. Yeah. So it's just kind of like, I definitely Ty Simpson.
Do you think Dante Moore is dead at Oregon?
No, I think he's alive.
I
think we would have heard about it if he died.
Okay.
I think I would have gotten that.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. When we get back, it's time for our prize picks. Sean's a jerk. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.